when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own.
This is Greg Masters reporting for Health Innovation Media with a special post-Health 2.0 series. The Health 2.0 Fall Gathering, often referred to as the granddaddy of them all, just concluded in Santa Clara for its 9th annual gathering. Noted from the stage as evidence of the Health 2.0 movement writ large, reaching maturity was the 1 year shy of its decade-long run, during which innovators and determined disruptors of legacy healthcare gather to pitch, collaborate, rank, nurture, and launch apps, platforms, or delivery models that move the needle from volume to value-based healthcare. This year was no exception, as the agenda was jam-packed with interesting titles, sessions, keynotes, pitches, and even deep dives. This session was sponsored by perhaps the granddaddy of legacy trade groups, the American Medical Association, whose presence at Health 2.0 is noted by co-founder and chairman Matt Holt as an indicator, if not validation, that this gathering, if not movement, is here to stay, opining, quote, "It's time to grow up and get some of this done," end quote. In this session, James Madera, MD and Executive Vice President / CEO, and Michael Tutte, PhD, Group Vice President for Professional Satisfaction and Practice Sustainability, interesting title, explore the, quote, "AppCure, Redefining the Daily Apple Through Technology," end quote, a session moderated by Scott Mace of Health Leaders. The program description notes, quote, "Technology has the power to ease physician workload, create a shared reference between patients and their doctors, connect people to the healthcare they need, and make information flow faster and more accurately. But what are the challenges? And how can physicians integrate and envision the possibilities to create a better patient care environment and deliver better outcomes?" End quote. Many of us know and perhaps experience the parallel universe that seems to prevail between the promise of digital health-fueled innovation and the day-to-day experience of mangled healthcare wrought by previous waves of innovation. So this session got my attention. Perhaps most noteworthy during this session is the announcement of the launch of an innovation center in SoMa, south of Market in San Francisco, to be officially debuted during the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference this January 2016. For more information, search Health 2047 because they're hiring. Following the introduction into the session and welcoming remarks of Scott Mace as moderator, we pick up the panel during Michael Tutte's discussion of a caveat emptor principle, warning that you may not be getting what you think you're getting in certain mHealth apps. So, enjoy.
Yeah. Right? And that's on the App Store. Fortunately, I think someone's starting to police this, and they're putting the word prank after these apps. So, but reading the reviews is quite funny of the people who downloaded that app as well and realized it was a prank and for entertainment and joy, as it says in the description. Getting a fake blood pressure reading gives you a lot of joy. I guess if your blood pressure was high and it gave you a good reading, that might give you a lot of joy. But we have this environment where there's all these apps and all these things, and patients are using them and bringing the data, but the physicians aren't sure if the data is valid. And then what we have today is the beginning. A lot of these tools and apps were about collecting information. Fitbit, I had one. I don't wear it anymore. I collected steps. But it was not able to turn that information into actionable and usable information for me. And I think that's where we're really seeing an advancement right now in technology, is not just collecting the information. This is my heart rate. This is my steps. This is my EKG. But how do you turn that into actionable information that I can use with a physician? I think there's still a divide that we need to close between these two worlds, digital health and digital medicine.
James, how are physicians in America hoping to shape or lead the way in terms of how data is integrated into practice in a way that fosters better health outcomes?
Well, surprisingly, we didn't have a very good baseline on physicians in practice, their satisfaction, dissatisfiers. And so we, in collaboration with RAND Health, did two national studies in multiple markets, multiple modes and types of practices, and to identify you know, what drives physician behaviors in these states. And what we found is that there was an aspect of physician behavior in the practice that the physicians found highly satisfying, and it was face-to-face time with patients. And the dissatisfiers were all the things that got in the way with that. Things that were administratively complex, things that disrupted the flow and the ability of the physicians to spend time with patients. Now, one of the things that is disrupting to patients, having physician time with patients, is an overly complex inbox. And so it's not surprising that physicians are not really looking for additional floods of pieces of data. And so one of the aspects that we are paying attention to is, how does one get actionable data? And as Michael said, it's really digital medicine that has a evidence base and is actionable, as opposed to these other things that are digital health, which is the broad swath. Maybe it's helpful to the individual, but it's probably not part that deserve to be part of their formalized medical record. And how does one get an actionable, parsimonious set of clinical data that can incorporate aspects that are from the patient as well as aspects that are from the clinic? And this is an area that we're working on currently, and I think will be very important to make these data usable. We find, for example, even in diabetes prevention programs that are external to the clinic and in a community center, that the ability for patients to engage that is highly amplified if the physician recommends it, thus indicating to the patient this is an important thing to do in their healthcare. So organizing that is going to be the mountain to be climbed.
Okay. Michael, what can physicians do to help their patients make sense of the vast amount of information available to them?
This is the challenge for physicians, as I was describing. Physicians are going to need to now get current, not only on the new treatment options, the genomics, but all these technologies that are out there, all these sort of consumable and wearable apps, and be able to recommend those that are appropriate, that are accurate, and that potentially can tie back, if appropriate, back to the electronic health record. I mean, just even being here for the last couple of days, it's like drinking from a fire hose of all the new technologies, all the demonstrations, all the great work and innovation that's happening. But as you can imagine, for a physician, every day seeing patients all day long, dealing with the difficulties of electronic health records, we've heard time and time again from various presentations over the last couple of days, you know, trying to keep current on this body of knowledge is really going to be difficult. But I think that's a task that physicians are going to have to get involved in and really start to meld the differences between this digital health and digital medicine, and really starting to look more into that health and wellness space, because it's so important to manage chronic conditions like diabetes and hypertension. But I think we're not there yet. I think we've got a lot of work to make sure physicians are well-informed. But I think there's still a lot of growth in the industry as well.
Question for you both. Are you managing your own health in any way with digital technology such as apps? And if so, any interesting findings you'd like to reveal?
Well, I do use my smartphone for steps and distance. The problem is I don't always have it with me. Certainly in areas where I'm, you know, I have some time, it's a Sunday afternoon, that kind of thing, one can measure and try to develop a habit. Other than that, I have to say, and this is not through an app or a device, but really through a cuff, major blood pressure. I mean, that is a recognizable, important biomarker for health, disease, early death. And it's actually not measured correctly often. So the correct way of measuring a blood pressure is not through your smart watch, which has in its small print for entertainment only, and is not validated. but to get something that is validated, and those are largely not the apps now, but things that are like old-fashioned cuffs. And the way one measures a blood pressure accurately is that you haven't had alcohol or caffeine or tobacco for at least 30 minutes. You've been relaxing for at least 5 minutes. You have not finished exercise right before. Your legs are not crossed. Now your bladder is empty. You're sitting comfortably in a chair for those at least 5 minutes with your feet flat on the floor. Your arm is bare. The cuff is at heart level, and you measure blood pressure. Now, how many of you have ever had a blood pressure measured like that? And all of those things, each one of those individually will distort the reading. So one of the things that's probably most useful in terms of this very important measure is, unfortunately, not from apps right now, but from measuring your blood pressure, you know, three times in the morning, three times at night, over a week, averaging that and taking that into your physician.
Scott, I've used a number of them. I have a Fitbit. I stopped wearing it. I've tracked my food intake over time. I know I lead a sedentary lifestyle and I eat horribly, so that's made me feel better. But it hasn't really incentivized me to change my motion or my diet. So I think we really need to move to the next generation of just from tracking information to actionable information, and hopefully I'll get off the couch more in the second generation.
I'll just add, these things are kind of difficult to do, so as an experiment, at our board meetings, I substituted in the afternoon, instead of cookies, we had fruit and nuts like they do here. And then I went to the third rail. I took away bacon for breakfast. This did not go well. And finally, I had to add the bacon back before a resolution of the board was made.
You don't mess with bacon. We talk about gadgets, but what about your own personal health records? Are you dashboarding your own health as reported out by your own physician's own electronic health record on you? Have either of you taken control of your own data?
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet where, you know, I have all measurements aligned, and then within the last 2 years, my provider has the health record and my electronic health record, all reports of tests, radiographs and whatnot online that I can access in a private way. So I have access both by the records I have kept for some time, as well as now my formal electronic health record.
Okay. There's been a notable shift in the AMA recently to serve as a major player on two fronts. One is innovation in healthcare overall, and technology. And can you expound on those, James?
Yes. So we kicked off about 3 years ago the first long-term strategic plan in the history of the organization, which is quite old, founded in 1847. And there are three mission pillars in that plan. The first is to change medical education, restructure medical education in medical school. It's not been restructured for 100 years. The curriculum is always updated, but the structure is the same. And elements that are important in that are, you know, moving to a competency-measured curriculum, team-based, quality-focused, and patient-centered, outpatient, focused on the emerging health crisis and chronic disease, which is going to be more and more of our disease burden in the next quarter century. So those kinds of things in education. And improving health outcomes, the second pillar, working, as Michael mentioned, with prediabetes and hypertension that's untreated, using partners that are classical, like our partnership with the Centers for Disease Control, or non-classical, like our partnership with the YMCAs of America as a community site for diabetes prevention programs. And then thirdly, the physician satisfaction practice sustainability work that Michael touched on. Now, all of this work has generated a series of really discrete and precisely defined problems. So we have to approach those in an innovative way. And for that reason, we're developing an innovation ecosystem. There are various parts of that innovation ecosystem. Michael can best talk about a digital platform, Steps Forward, for physicians' offices that allow them to adapt and incorporate lean techniques and other approaches. We're also working with incubators such as Matter in Chicago, Matter 105 startups now, and we try to seed the workflow and the granular knowledge of what's needed at the origin of the concept that the entrepreneur has, so we don't end up getting thrown over the transom into the healthcare system, something that's 10 or 20 degrees off what would be an optimal solution. And thirdly, as part of this ecosystem, we're opening an innovation lab here in the Bay Area. It'll be south of Market in San Francisco. It will be launched in and around the J.P. Morgan January conference. We have space, we've opened doors, we have initial hires, and it will be a pre-venture rapid prototyping lab. So this is a new approach for us, but an approach that's dictated by the fact that these three pillars have produced a lot of problems and need solutions.
Will AMA, and you don't know this question is coming, will AMA be thinking about putting a good housekeeping seal of approval on apps for patients? Is that something that this could lead to?
Yeah, our role has largely been not picking winners and losers, so to speak, but establishing principles. So one principle that Michael already articulated is that an app to be usable from our point of view should have a deep evidence base supporting the readouts, the kind of information that it provides. And then there should also be work around how that information now touches the medical system and the provider and adds to the continuity of care in an acceptable way. So we like to establish principles rather than putting seals on things.
Okay. Kind of a related issue. I was listening, as I do in my copious spare time, to one of the Health IT Policy Committee meetings in Washington. And one of the people in that meeting mentioned that they had discovered a mobile app in the App Store that talks about the providers the mobile app works with. He didn't name the app, but he named some of the providers who were name-checked. One was Palo Alto Medical Foundation, not far from here. But part of the business model of that app in the App Store is to sell data to pharmaceutical companies. And I'm wondering if one of your principles has to do with who pays for the app and what happens to the data in the app. And, you know, I could see different solutions to that, where maybe in one case it'll be the patient agrees to give up some privacy for low cost of the app, or maybe to help with the outcomes because they have a serious disease. Whereas other people, more concerned about the privacy, you might want to ask them to pay some money for that app to support the app, because otherwise, how are you going to pay for the app? And this is a whole issue about apps. Any thoughts?
I'm going to ask Michael to comment, but I'll preface the remarks by saying that one of the founding principles of the AMA in 1847 was the development of the first clinical code of medical ethics, which is updated each year. It's being extensively revised right now, and it's this large code that we refer to and build on each year around problems such as this, issues such as this.
Yes. So we're still working through the sort of the guidelines, the guardrails that we'd like to see around apps. It's something that we did for electronic health records that released 2 years ago. We put together a number of experts and put together sort of 8 principles that we'd like to see it with electronic health records. As we're seeing this space adopt in the app world, the digital world, we're starting to pull that together as well. Obviously, the patient safety is an issue. The patient data, how this stuff is being used, is going to be clearly a need to have some guardrails how these new apps are being developed and having guardrails about how patient data is being used. We had some interesting discussions at the plenary session this morning from the folks from ONC about some of the concerns and, you know, some of the ways they're using Twitter data even. And we all assume that our Twitter feed is pretty open to the public, you assume. But you know, all this sort of data, we are going to need to create some guidelines, and we are in the process of putting those ideas together.
What do you think the physician office of the future looks like? How do you think the AMA is paving the way to make that a reality?
So I would say that one of the things that we have paid attention to as an organization recently is the topic of telemedicine. You know, hospitals will probably at some time in the future be restricted to the incredibly sick. There are even health systems currently when a patient comes into the emergency department and is evaluated, it's the type of patient that would have been admitted to a hospital in the past, and the prescription is written to admit to home. And then home connection of the materials that are needed, the nursing that is needed, is set up. So we are working, for example, with the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, who are building a house of the future. And between the museum, Skidmore, Owens, Merle, the architectural firm, and our own work, part in collaboration with Matter, we're trying to fashion what a home would look like in the future, because that will be a place where a lot of healthcare resides. Now, the telemedicine, to make that a reality, has a couple of issues that needs to be worked through. One is a simple sort of payment kind of issues that, you know, what will be permitted by payers, where we have policy toward opening that up and are working with the various payers toward that end. Another is that, particularly in rural areas, if someone needs a consultant that might be across a state line, how do we handle the licensing? And we're working with the National Association of State Medical Boards to create a fast-track licensing for those that have a license in one state, but probably will be participating from another state in telemedicine kinds of events. And then the third and last thing I'll mention that we're paying a lot of attention to is how to keep that very special patient-physician contact in this tele world. That will be something that will be important to do. But for example, you just can consider tools such as Oculus Rift, where particularly if one takes the virtual reality and augments that virtual reality in a way that one can, particularly with a person that you already know, have a meaningful personal connection from a fairly large distance.
Just speaking of that last point, Jim, I mean, the research that we did when we kicked off our work to understand why physicians were dissatisfied with their careers with RAND really boiled down to physicians want to spend time with patients. And the things that dissatisfy them are all those things that take away from time with patients. And some of that is technology. Electronic health record takes time away from patients. So I think when we see the office of the future, it'll be very much technology enabled, but that technology will be seamless in a way that is not visible. It's not going to take away from time with patient, but actually enhance that time. And I mean, I think we keep throwing a lot of technology into physicians' offices without really understanding how the workflow of physician offices. I was actually talking with a doctor right here, Herman New, about we spend a lot of time on technology, but not a lot of workflow and processes and how to improve that. Some of our work through our Steps Forward, the resources for physicians, to really understand how to organize your practice in a more efficient manner so you can spend more time with your patients. Because there are a lot of inefficiencies in just the way we operate in healthcare, how just the operations. So I see technology much more enabled in the practice, much more integrated, but in a seamless way that enhances that patient-physician relationship, because that's why we go to the doctor. We want to spend time with our patient. We don't want him or her to have their back to us as they're typing on a keyboard. And I think as we get in that direction, You know, I've talked with physicians, and you know, you start to lose some of that things that you pick up, the subtleties that maybe even technology can't pick up, the way people answer their questions or how they're sitting in their chair, and they may have some issues that they don't want to talk about. Or many physicians say that those questions you get when you put your hand on the door handle to walk out, they've always got that one more question, which happens to be the most important question in the entire visit. You know, that's some of the personal connection you get when you have two people connecting about their own healthcare and working collaboratively over their own healthcare. And technology needs to embrace that and support that, not take away from that. And I think that's where we're going to have a really successful office in the future and a better healthcare system for patients and the physicians, nurses, and other healthcare providers that care for them.
Yeah, it seems like starting from the telemedicine premise, you're not even maybe even in an office. I mean, you have telemedicine, you have the models that people like Heal are talking about, where you know, reinvent the house call. You have care teams where there are health coaches and people who weren't traditionally part of the care system, but these apps seem to, a lot of them, feed into those models rather than trying to overwhelm the physician, the poor physician, with all that information. Thoughts on either one of those evolutions of the office, one being, you know, the reinvented house call and the other being sort of the health coach care team paradigm?
Yeah, I would say that two principles that are going to be very important are organization of the data and connectivity with the health plan. So that if there is a house visit, you know, if I had a bit of a fever, wanted to see someone, I would certainly prefer that. I'm not sure the business model would scale, but that has to be worked out. But the important thing is that that's not a fragment isolated from the rest of the information and the care process. Because remember, one of the big movements in health that has happened in the last half century is the movement from acute disease burden to chronic disease burden. And that means that we have to have less fragments, less fragment of information and care, and more continuity. And if we look at what's happening in the field of cancer treatment, it appears that there will be less cures than we would like, and we will convert those kinds of diseases, as we've converted cardiovascular disease, into a chronic manageable state. So we're going to have more chronic disease burden, and it's very important that both the care plan is continuous and it's not fragmented, which means these things have to plug in an organized way to that plan.
And we've got to follow money. I mean, money is really what drives where we're headed this. And I think what we're seeing is a big shift in reimbursement by large insurance companies, by Medicare, to move for this concept of value-based reimbursement away from fee-for-service. And when you move to a value-based environment, it really promotes team-based care, the larger care team, the larger apps, because now you're not just seeing patients and getting reimbursed on a fee-for-service, see a patient get paid, but now managing your population health. You know, we've got public health, we've got individual, and this population, you know, for a primary care physician could be their panel of 2,000, 2,500 patients that they're being reimbursed for now by payers who want to know that they're taking care of their health in a larger way. So as we move to this value, it's going to be really an exciting opportunity to promote the larger care team and these other apps that can support home-based care or other things so that it's not always bring your child in. I mean, any parents who have young kids, as I do, you call the pediatrician, my daughter Audrey, she's not feeling well, the nurse on the phone always says, well, bring her in. Well, of course, bring her in. A fee-for-service environment, they're only going to get paid if I bring her in. But also, you know, there's no current systems to provide care. But in a value-based environment where they may have an app or a tool that allows them to diagnose, treat, and call on prescriptions, it's easier for me. But also in an environment where they're getting reimbursed that way, the incentives start to align. So I think we are seeing the incentives align that they're really going to promote a lot of exciting innovation.
We've got about 20 minutes left, and you've got a direct line to the AMA leadership right here, and I think they can answer any question you have, except possibly they won't be diagnosing from this stage. But I'm happy to have anyone use one of the two microphones here, but if not, I will continue to, yeah, looks like gentleman is coming to the microphone over here. Cool.
My name is Arun Vilivalama. I'm a family physician, and I was actually interested to learn a little bit more about what the plan is for the work in San Francisco with the venture group that you're thinking of starting. I mean, how would that look like? What would the goals be? How would you foster innovation? How would you bring physicians into that? Or, how would you build teams to create ideas?
So this is early into it. The selection criteria for projects is just now being defined. The idea is to take interesting ideas and problems that are observed in healthcare and do rapid prototyping using design approaches to get to investable ideas and investable solutions. And so the teams will be mixed teams. The teams will have engineers, coders, behavioral scientists, and designers. Thus far, we have a CEO, a chief design, a chief technology officer, and we will build from there. I think that from the comments, you can probably guess that it will be heavy on the health services side, heavy on protecting and freeing physician time so physicians can interact with patients, and heavy in building systems that bring needed information to the point of care at the right time.
You know, specifically about how physicians can get involved in our work at Matter with the incubator in Chicago, we have space there, we're working with startups. Every startup we meet with says, I'd love to get in front of some physicians. I want to talk with some physicians about my idea. So we've been doing that in sort of a real world environment, pulling physicians from the Chicago area or when we have events to meet with those. But as we start to expand this, we're really thinking about how we can do this virtually and hopefully going to be piloting some ideas for physicians who want to get involved with startups and how startups can get some physician input. So hopefully soon we'll have announced more of those opportunities to connect.
Gentlemen, just a quick add-on. So if we paint the picture of continuity of care, chronic disease playing out in the community instead of in front of the provider as we move from acute to chronic as the problem, then I just want to throw out another analysis and you can see where another problem may be. And that is in working with some folks on Wall Street, thinking about the analysts that are in healthcare for the capital markets in the United States. Back of the envelope calculation is about 500. About two-thirds of them are either in San Francisco, Boston, or New York. About two-thirds of them have advanced degrees. Of those analysts that are MDs, virtually all went into the industry after training. The ones that didn't actually practice, largely practiced and specialties in large academic settings. Do you see the disconnect of the information, the background of the analyst community with what the disease prevalence and burden of the problems of disease actually is? That's another area where I think we can provide information, and the person who, the primary care physician, we need people with that kind of experience.
Yeah.
So I'm Sachin, I'm from DocApp, proud creator of Hippocrates, and I'm working with Dr. Jeff Stevenson. So he is in workers' comp, and another UI guy from Apple. So I've looked at about 800 EMRs, sorted out 15 of them, the top 15, been on customer calls, actual customer calls for 10 of them, lasting more than an hour or so. And then in the end, with Dr. Stevenson, obviously. And in the end, what I've figured out is, I think the EMRs in the sense go up to the 80, 85%, 90% of the thing, but it's the last piece that they cannot implement because the business or whatever way it is done, it does not justify them doing that. And now if you try to switch to another EMR, it's some other 10% that's not being done. It's never the common 10% that. So after quite a few months, we figured out that we build a model which says, the doctor says, this is what my physician and my model should look like. And the EMRs basically connect into them. And he does back end push and pull into that. And the workflow can be changed. So we have looked at scanning of paper. We have looked at transcription. We have looked at workers' comp, building dashboards for them. Very sophisticated dashboards can be dealt private to the physician.
What is your question?
My question is, it's a doable thing, but we need resources so that people don't need to, the workflow can be improved. They can, the doctors can look at very intently at the patient. The staff also can be done, but we need the connectivity into the EMRs, which is harder to get by. We can build a model which the doctors will like. So this is, Stevenson is getting hammered with this.
So it's basically a question about how do we get the existing EMRs to interoperate with
Correct.
Everybody here is barking for it.
It's a good question. So you talk about the large EHR vendors and you know, switching may not be any better. And we've got a lot of research that shows for practices that switch from product A to product B, that struggle and that transition was as difficult or more difficult than they went from paper to the first time they went electronic. So changing products may not necessarily. So there are, as you're talking about, ways to have other products that are built onto electronic health record, but having those open standards. There are a number of industry initiatives that are trying to push for those open standards, SMART and others that the AMA has representation on. So we are really pushing for that. And we do work with the EHR Vendor Association, and we meet with them, which represents most of the large vendors are represented in there. So we are pushing that and having discussions with individual vendors, but it's a little bit of a struggle to get sort of an industry standard, push that open, but we're both talking with the vendors and some of the industry-wide initiatives that are happening.
Out of respect to the audience, I want to get to the other questions, so thanks for your question. Over here.
Hi, we've been hearing a theme across the many panels and the many days about the importance of emotional well-being. That was one of the Surgeon General's three pillars, as well as the need for behavioral interventions, more than just technology per se. And I'm actually trained as a clinician in mental health as well as a computer scientist. So, and I come also from a history of family caregiving. So what I'm wondering is, what is the AMA's intentions for actually incorporating more broadly into the medical, the body treatment plans, mental health treatment plans, and actually also acknowledging that the best mental health therapists, in my opinion, are those who actually have an area of specialty. And I would love to see some kind of a matching so that you're not just thrown over the fence to an average, you know, a generic therapist as if they're a primary care physician, but actually even doing specialty matching so that you're actually going for a cure and remission of mind-body, the mind component of disease, which mind and body are mutually reinforcing. So I'm just wondering what the AMA's plans are in that area.
Yeah, well, great question, given the prevalence of mental health issues in our society. The reason we selected prediabetes, for example, for our work was not that we were focused only on prediabetes. It was selected as an element of chronic disease that needs care that has to have a community aspect to that as well. And so we're looking at that disease to try to pick the lock of how do you deal with a highly prevalent disease in a complex nation where part of the solution probably has to also be a community organizational based. And we're hoping that that model then, when identified, can be applied in a form first kind of way to other really important chronic diseases, including mental health.
It's the behavioral health issue is very important. I mean, it's also a huge issue for the physician workforce. Mm-hmm. You know, between 3 and it's under, you know, it doesn't get a lot of press, but the, you know, there's some data that says between 300 and 400 physicians commit suicide every year. You know, the wellness of our workforce is also an important issue that we're working on to take very seriously as well in the AMA.
Thanks.
Over here.
Hi, my name is Dominique Kim. I work for Kaiser Permanente, and I just wanted to applaud the AMA's development of this innovation center, particularly with a focus on, as you put it, playing into the community, a lot of the socioeconomic and behavioral factors that are truly the determinants often of health. My question is, how do you envision partnering with the bigger and smaller healthcare and health plans, so delivery and plan industry players in the Bay Area, obviously Kaiser, but also UCF and others? How do you, I guess, concretely envision, playing together in this very, very potentially rich space for opportunity?
So one of the aspects of the AMA historically has been as a powerful convener, and so we routinely connect with other organizations. So, for example, in IHO, the pre-diabetes work, the first scaling was done just in the last few months, the beginning of that project to scale, and that was done in the state of Michigan. And we brought together community organizations, payers, providers, employers, 40 different of these groups to map out a pathway. So I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we have a systems problems, and we don't behave as a system. To give you a sense of that, 2 years ago, I was working with Rich Umbenstock, my counterpart in the American Hospital Association, and we organized a day and a half meeting of the leadership of the boards of the two organizations together in D.C. And in planning the agenda, I said, Rich, why don't we jump off from where the last meeting ended? We couldn't figure out when the last meeting was. And it had been at least 35 years since the AHA and the AMA had sat down together in a leadership way. So this is the problem. We look forward to working with our colleagues in all of these communities.
Thank you.
I should also say that part of the reason for this work is we all know the tremendous cost of healthcare in this country and where we are in the cost curve compared with other countries and OECD countries in particular. One point that's often not made is if you look at the safety net, the health safety net in the OECD countries, we're dead last. And so we have very little support for the community kind of aspects, mental health that was mentioned. I doubt that we're going to get more money in the public health system to address this. So we have to look for novel ways of using community organizations that can have sustainable business plans to make up for this difference that we have in the safety net as compared with other OECD countries.
Picked a rich city to put your innovation center in San Francisco, so thank you.